So in the sixth chapter, Bhagwan last week had told us what is the benefit of meditation. He says it is the joy that is experienced is beyond any other joy. Nothing else can equal it. And having attained that joy, the joy of meditation is unparalleled, what you experience when you become one with that self, which is what meditation does. And that was our meditation class also this morning. And it says that there is no greater joy than that in the world. Anything can, even heaven cannot experience that. And once this person is established in the truth and feels God's presence within and becomes one with the self, the Atma, the consciousness, then even the greatest sorrow in the world, the heaviest sorrows, heaviest discomfort, nothing can bother him. Nothing can bother him and him or her, and such a person always remains in contact with the self. And that is what we also tell that what the joy we experience in meditation, those of you who meditate regularly, when you connect with that, keep that feeling. Whenever you remember, you just turn your attention inwards. So we'll talk about that also today. So today we'll do number 23, chapter 6, number 23, where Bhagwan Krishna has given us a new meaning of meditation. It's a very unusual meaning of meditation, which we have not heard before, which he calls yoga. Yoga, it means dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation. So number 10, 23, tam vidya dukkha sanyoga. Yogam yoga sangitam sa nischayena yoktavyah yogo nirvinna chetasa. Together, tam vidya dukkha sanyoga viyogam yoga sangitam sa nischayena yoktavyah yogo nirvinna chetasa. I'll try to keep my finger on it and keep it. So this is called yoga. Now Bhagwan is giving us a new meaning of the word yoga. Yoga means dhyana yoga, because yoga in different parts of the Bhagavad Gita means different. In third chapter, it means karma yoga. In 12th chapter, it means bhakti yoga. In 9th and 13th and others, it means jnana yoga, knowledge. But in the sixth chapter, when Bhagwan uses the word yoga, he's telling us that it is dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation. So what is meditation? That is, he says, tam vidya. Tam means that one should know, that one should be known. Dukkha sanyoga viyoga. Dukkha Sanyoga means contact with sorrow. And Viyog means detachment from contact with sorrow. So if you have contact with sorrow, and when you detach from that contact with sorrow, that is called yoga. And this yoga, this dhyana yoga meditation, nischayena yoktavya, should be practiced with determination. Firm determination, that's what I want. And this yoga should be practiced nirvina chetasa. Nirvina chetasa means I should not give up. My mind should not give up on this path. You know, oh, I shouldn't say, I have been meditating 6 months. You know, nothing has happened. God is still not appeared in front of me. Or I have been studying Bhagavad Gita, but I still have all my problems. So with firm determination, we should practice this yoga of meditation and not give up. So yoga is detachment from, no, yoga is detachment from attachment to sorrow. So this says, what does Bhagavan mean, attachment to sorrow and detachment from that? So what happens is that our life is basically mostly sorrow and then little bit of joy in between. So what do we mean by that? So what it means is that you say, well, my life is not all sorrow. But the thing is, whatever I get in this life temporarily may give me joy, but sooner or later will lead to sorrow. An object I get, a new car, a new house, after a few years becomes old and will give me sorrow. Okay, then I have a friend or somebody I love, you know, my beloved, my spouse. In the beginning, there is a lot of love, and then soon they say, I don't love you anymore. I, you know, want a divorce. So anything in this world, sooner or later, we have to give up. Even our money, our objects, our home, all that will give us joy. But at the time of death, I have to give it up. Or even before death, you know, I have a lot of money in the stock market. Suddenly it collapses. All my joy is gone. So whatever we get attached in this world may give us temporary joy, but ultimately it will lead to sorrow. And I said, if nothing else, at the time of death, when I'm leaving, I have to leave all my near and dear ones, my children, grandchildren, my spouse, my money, my bank balance, everything, my new car. Nothing stays with us. Only thing that goes with us are our karmas. So only thing that goes with us are our karmas, good or bad karmas, and our vasanas, whatever our desires are, whatever my karmas are, they go to the next life, and those I have to practice. So that's why it is very important what kind of karmas I do in this life will determine not only my joy or sorrow in this life, but also in future lives. So that is why this yoga is detachment from sorrow. And what do we do? How do I detach? You know, I said, I'm so dependent on all my things, my possessions, my longings, my people I love. And what that does is lead to dependence, that without this, I cannot live. Without this, I won't be happy. So how do I remove my dependence? Because the mind needs something to hold on to. Mind cannot live in a vacuum. You say, okay, you say, don't be attached to things. Then whom should I be attached to? Attached to God. And God is not only outside in the temple or in the church or in my puja room, but God is also within me as life, as consciousness, as my true nature. So I attach my mind to God and detach from the world. So they say you should make a U-turn in your life. Of course, this I'm talking before GPS, you know, you took a wrong exit and you have gone for a few miles and then suddenly you realize, oh my God, I'm lost. I'm so far away from the freeway. So what do you have to do? You have to look for a U-turn. You know, let me find where the next U-turn is. I'll turn around and go back to my freeway and then go to the right path. So first you have to realize that you are going wrong. Secondly, you have to have a desire to go back to your true road, and then you have to find a U-turn. So in life, I have to realize that my constant chasing after worldly things, objects, people, is taking me in the wrong direction, is making me dependent. And so I need to turn around. So my mind, which has been running into the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, because that is how we live our life, should be turned inward to God's presence within. So instead of looking outside, I have to look for joy within. So I have to first realize that I am going in the wrong direction. Then I have to decide I want to make a U-turn, go to the right direction, and then find the path. And the path is given to us by the Bhagavad Gita, by Upanishads, by our gurus, our rishis. This path of enlightenment, path of the highest goal, and that can only come when I have the knowledge of given to me by the Bhagavad Gita, and I decide to apply that knowledge. See, knowledge you can get, but when I apply that knowledge, that is called. And this joy that we experience when we connect with God within the self, the consciousness, that I can get only through meditation, through connection with the truth, through right knowledge. This joy cannot be given to me by somebody else. Like government cannot say, okay, from next month onward, everybody will get two bottles of this joy of meditation, and you can consume it slowly, slowly throughout the 2 months. You know, it's not going to be like Trump's, what is that, the dividend check, which we haven't yet seen. But not to talk politics. But the point is that the government cannot give you, or doctor cannot give you a prescription. Okay, take this medicine and take 2 teaspoons every day and you will have the joy of bliss of enlightenment. It can only be obtained through the teachings and through connecting with God who is within. Of course, we see God in the temple, in plants, flowers, birds, animals, but God is with me at all times. And for that, one has to have the right wisdom and determination, firm determination. And that determination, that effort gives me merit, gives me the highest gain, and that can be only obtained in this way. So people, but as we said, people give up. You know, it's too hard. I don't think I can do it. Maybe next life, maybe 3 lifetimes. We say, no, right now is the best time. You are already here. You have this knowledge. Bhagwan Sri Krishna has himself given this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So apply that and do not give up. And then just a little side point, you know, Patanjali's yoga, Patanjali Rishi was a great, great Rishi, and he gave us the 8-point yoga. And people say, why cannot I not practice that? And we say, that's good. 8 points, I will go briefly. Yama is the practicing the values. Niyama is controlling the senses and the mind. Asana, pranayam, that everybody knows, the physical exercises, the pranayam. Pratyahar, pratyahar means detach from the world, and dharana, dharana means hold on to the higher. Dhyana is meditation, and samadhi is merger. So these 8 steps are very, very beneficial in practice. And a lot of people in India do practice this, you know, this yoga asanas and all this pranayam breathing, you know, all these different kinds of breathing. In fact, I had an uncle in the 1960s, he has passed away, but he knew 125 yoga asanas at that time. He used to spend his whole time besides his job in perfecting these asanas. He had won competitions and he had a whole album he used to show us. So people spend a lot of time, and that is good, but that is not the final. People think just by breathing or just by, you know, meditate. Because when you come out of that samadhi, or when you are done with that breathing, the ignorance still remains. Who am I? Who am I really? And the knowledge of who am I comes in the Bhagavad Gita, comes in the Upanishads, and they all tell us that you are not only this body, you are Atma, you are Self, you are consciousness. That is your true nature. So only by Jnana, the Marg of Jnana or knowledge, Jnana Yoga, this ignorance can be overcome. And unless you give up the ignorance, your spiritual progress will be limited. Even Patanjali's yogas are very good. But if they are accompanied by knowledge, then your progress is faster. So that's why Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. There is no greater purifier than knowledge. Puja, you know, karma yoga, all those are good. But if you really want to purify your mind, you do it through knowledge. And another place Bhagavan says in the Gita, Jnanagni sarva karmanam basmasat kurute arjuna. Oh, this fire of knowledge will burn all your past karmas, everything, when you reach that state of enlightenment. And for that, we need effort. See, it's not going to come just like that. It will be a gradual progress, and we have to put constant effort and basically change our life. Of course, we continue to work, and does not mean that I don't get attached to my children, my family, my goods, possessions, but make them secondary to God. And God is my main goal. God is my purpose. And then alone the progress will happen. So now the 24 and 25, Bhagwan Sri Krishna is going to tell us about meditation, how to meditate. See, he has already told us how to prepare the meditation, how to get yourself ready, what you should do, not do, what kind of diet and all. Now he will tell us the actual process of meditation. So we'll do number 24 and then we'll do 25 separately, even though Gurudev has combined them. But they are two different ideas, so it will be easier for me to explain that way. So number 24. Sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvana sheshatah manasaivendriya gramam viniyamya samantatah. Together, sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvana sheshatah manasaivendriya gramam yamya samantatah. So, I'll translate this and then we'll go over the meaning. Commentary. So sankalpa prabhavan, the born out of sankalpa. Sankalpa is a very important point, and Gurudev has covered it in his commentary and also in other commentaries. So I'll talk about what is sankalpa. Sankalpa means fanciful imaginations in one word, and then we can explain it. Sankalpa prabhavan kaman. So kaman means desires. Prabhavan means born out of sankalpa. So desires born out of fanciful imaginations. What do you do? Tyaktva, having given up sarvan, all desires. See, all desires, yes. Bad desires, yes. Good desires, yes. Even good desires have to be given up. Asheshataha, completely. Good desire does not mean that I should not do good things, but we'll talk about what it means to give up the desires. Even good desires can bind us, so that also should be That means one should not have any desire that will make me complete, and we'll talk about that. And then what do you do after having given up desires, having given up sankalpa? Manasa eva indriya gramam. Indriya gramam means this host of senses. We have 10 senses, eyes, ears, nose, skin, tongue, the sense organs and the organs of action, hands, feet, speech, reproductive and excretory organs. So we have 10, five sense organs, five organs of action. So manasa eva indriya gramam. These senses should be controlled by the mind alone. Viniyamya. Viniyamya means completely controlled. These our desires should be completely controlled. And the senses, samantataha means from all sides. So how do we sit for meditation? Give up fanciful imaginations, reduce desires, give them up, and control the senses from running out. Because that is the problem, you know, we'll talk about that. So here, already Bhagwan has told us earlier how to control the body, how to, you know, the body, how to sit, how to keep the neck, head and neck and back in the same straight line, how to breathe, all that Bhagwan has taught us. Now he will talk about the mind, because ye sab man ka hi khel hai. This whole thing is a play of the mind. That is the most important problem. In meditation, it is the mind, because I sit down and I try, and then for a while it is quiet when I'm breathing and watching my breath, and then it takes off. You know, here and there, in this direction, that direction. I want this, I want that. Or you know, after meditation, what will I do? So the mind is the problem. And sankalpa has two different meaning. Sankalpa, one is meaning is fanciful imagination. Say I go to a party and I see this lady, you know, wearing a brand new necklace, you know, with a big diamond, you know, 2 carat or something. And I say, why does my husband not buy me a necklace like that? And the whole party I don't enjoy, because my mind is on the diamond, on the necklace, and why, how nice it would be if I had it. Or, you know, I'm sitting on in my house on my patio with my feet up in a Sunday morning, bright, you know, sunshine coming, very pleasant day, nice breeze blowing. And then I see my neighbor driving with his new $90,000 BMW. You know what BMW stands for? Big money waste. Big money waste. So, oh my God, my morning is ruined. You know, I was enjoying my feet, and then I look at my small little Chevy BMW. Then that's it, you know, my morning is gone. Or I have a, you know, decent house, and then my brother-in-law, whom I don't get along very well with, but anyway, he buys a huge house on Seven Oaks, you know, behind the gated community, and then he has an open house, and then I have to go, because, you know, sari khudai ek taraf, joru ka bhai ek taraf. Whole world can be on one side, but the wife's brother, I have to keep him happy. So I go there, and there he has this big house and swimming pool and spa. Oh, then I'm stressed out. You know, my life is not going to be happy till I get such a house. So I struggle, take a loan, and with great difficulty, I'm able to qualify, and I buy a big house, bigger than his. And then I go there. But then I'm struggling to pay the mortgage, because, you know, my income is not, so I take a second job and work overtime and stress out, cut down my other expenses. So I live for the house rather than house for me. You know, I'm trying. And then after a few years, by the time my income gets stable, I can now comfortably afford the house. Children are gone. They're gone to college. So now this, you know, old husband and wife sitting alone, you know, in this 6-bedroom house all by themselves, and the children don't come, they don't call, you know, they are busy with their family. So and then they say, what do I have to do? I have to downgrade now, you know, So our whole life is just living with the Jones, you know, copying what the Jones want, what they have. And that is how we live our life. So why do we do that? Because our senses go outward and we see, hear, taste, smell, touch something. And we feel that if I have that, it will be make me happy. So I find that my life is incomplete. And only by getting that, it will become complete. That does not mean that one shouldn't buy a house or a car or jewelry and all. But if you have intense longing where this and this alone I want, and to get it, I will do anything. It can be an object. It can be even a job. You know, there's a vice president's opening in my company, and there is another guy, you know, competing with me. And then what I do, I find out his background, find some things he has done wrong, and then tell the CEO and cut his throat, you know, backstab him. So that is longing, where we do wrong things to get what we want. And so these are the examples of sankalpa, fanciful imagination, where I'm ready to do anything to get what I want. So Gurudev also gives another meaning of sankalpa, is that I've started one path to do something, and after a little while I'll say, this is not good, let me choose that, let me choose the third, let me choose the fourth. So you run from different one path to another without ever accomplishing anything. So in spirituality, a person is doing karma yoga, he's doing a lot of service, helping people, working hard. And he said, this is too much hard work. You know, they say bhakti is better than karma yoga. So I go to that temple. I can sit in my puja room and air conditioned comfort and just keep on doing japa, keep on doing some pujas and prayers. I do that for a while, and then I say, this is also, you know, repetition. I need something else. So I hear some Swami talking about jnana. I say, oh, jnana is superior. So I give up karma yoga, give up bhakti. I'm reading the Bhagavad Gita. Not only Gita, but I'm reading commentaries by all different Swamis and teachers, different who have different emphasis. And then I'm reading different books, you know, 7 laws of this and 14 means of this, and they all that they come. So I don't never stick to one path, and so I never reach. So that's what they say, that one should pick a path and do activities that are unselfish. How do you purify your mind? As we says, making the mind reduce desire is by the path of unselfish work. Selfish work is that by doing this, I will get success, I will get this, I will get that, or I will get worldly success. Or some people say, I'm not doing for worldly success. I want success in heaven. I want to go to heaven after I die. So I do pujas, and then I do rituals, and I call pandits, and they do all the, you know, havan and all that. I do that, and I spend all my time in that. Why? And then I fast. I say, I will fast here so I can feast in heaven. So I can eat more in heaven. And so I fast here. I don't enjoy life. So this is how, you know, we postpone. And then we say, even heaven, you know, is not permanent. You go there for a few years. Here maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30 years you enjoy. There maybe 100 years. But soon as your clock is ticking, your karmas are slowly catching up, and whatever good karmas you have done in heaven, they get exhausted, and then you have to come back. And so again, heaven is not a permanent joy. It's not an eternal joy. It is joy for a longer time, and it is more joy than what we experience. So like in heaven, if you here you want Coca-Cola, you have to go buy it. There you just think Coca-Cola, it appears. Or it doesn't, you don't even have to drink it. You just think Coca-Cola and you get the joy in your mind. You get the happiness. So it's the same thing. You know, it's not any, it's just a greater level of joy. So that is the problem. And what happens is our mind is covered with so many dust, so much dust of wrong desires, wrong actions, wrong thought, thinking. It's like, you know, in the villages in India, they have, you know, dusty roads. They don't have proper roads. And so every morning, every day, the dust is blowing. And in your courtyard, if it is near the road, it gets covered with dust. And so the lady of the house gets up early in the morning and she sweeps all the dust, everything clean. And, you know, that is, you know, that gives her joy and everybody. But suppose she's gone away for a week, you know, to visit her parents or her brother, and then nobody cleans, that the house is covered with dust, and she comes back and she says, "Kya hua ye? What did you guys do when I was gone?" So just as the dust needs daily cleaning, our mind needs daily cleaning, because there is so much dust covering our mind. Dust is not of physical dust, but the dust of wrong vasanas, wrong thoughts, wrong desires. So daily cleaning of the mind. So how do we purify the mind? With the body, I do karma yoga. With the mind, I do bhakti. And with the intellect, I get the knowledge. So constant remembrance of God, constant chanting of his name, constant working for him, doing all my duties for God, whatever duties come to me, or I pick up a project. This is something which is beneficial for the community. And I do it dedicated to God without I, me, and my, without ownership. And such, so with karma yoga, bhakti, and jnanam, our mind is purified, it is controlled. And there is a story which I can tell. There was this man who was sitting by the river just watching. And suddenly he sees a branch of the river float, a branch of the tree floating on the river. And he finds a gold necklace attached to the branch. And he says, "Oh, what? How did this come? Maybe somebody might have dropped it." So he said, "Oh," he jumps in the water. He says, "I must get that. Gold necklace looks very expensive. I can sell it. I need money. I can buy a new car or whatever." So he starts pulling the stick towards him. It is a long branch, and he's pulling it slowly, slowly, the leaves slowly, they are coming. And just when he's about to grab it, it slips. The necklace slips and falls and goes away. He starts crying. So somebody says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "My necklace is gone." When did it become yours? Just for 1 second, you just touched it. But we think, you know, my necklace. So that is how, that is desire, and that is how these desires bind us and give us sorrow. So that's what this shloka says, that give up desires, give up fanciful imaginations, and control the senses with the mind. Let the mind control the senses. Let my mind not run out. I'm sitting for meditation and I hear some car going, and it's my neighbor John, and normally he goes to work at 8, but today he's going at 6. Why is he going at 6? What happened to his job? Did he have a problem? Normally, so 20 minutes, instead of thinking about God, I'm thinking about my neighbor. So senses will run out, or I'm sitting and my spouse has made coffee, so I'm smelling coffee, so I'm saying, after meditation, it will be wonderful to have a nice, fresh cup. So the senses, or like we said, we see things, you know, in a party and all. So senses will take us outward. But with the mind, I have to say that this time is for meditation. And how should we meditate? This next 25 is probably one of the best shlokas for meditation. Actually, I myself have used to practice this quite a bit. I still do at times. Think about this shloka. So this is something we can all apply. Number 25. Shanai shanai ruparamed.
Shanai shanai ruparamed.
Uthya dhriti grahitaya. Atma samstham mana kritva. Na kinchidapi chintayet.
Na kinchidapi chintayet.
शनै शनैरुपरमेत् बुद्ध्या धृतिगृहीतया आत्मसंस्थं मनः कृत्वा न किञ्चिदपि चिन्तयेत्. So also those who are in the room can see on the TV the points that we use. And on for those who are on Zoom, it is on your phone, on the WhatsApp, Gita class. So shanai shanai, slowly, slowly. And that is very important because meditation has to be done without hurry and slowly, without, there is no shortcut. Shanai shanaihi, so slowly, slowly, uparamet. Uparamet, uparati means to withdraw. So the mind is withdrawn from the world. We already talked in the previous shloka. And how? Buddhaya dhriti grihitaya. The intellect, buddhi, grihit, holds the mind and connects it, keeps it here. My mind should not be running, should stay here. And then what do I do with the mind? Having withdrawn from the desires, having withdrawn from the senses, atma samstham, settle the mind in the self. Settle the mind in atma. Place the mind in atma. We'll talk about what that means. Mana kritva, having done that, na kinchid api chintaye, think of nothing else. Kinchid api. So, the intellect is the supervisor of the mind. My mind is the one that wants to enjoy, run around. The intellect is supposed to control the mind. Intellect means the right knowledge, the wisdom I have from the gurus, from the scriptures, all the teachings. That right knowledge has to control the mind, not let the mind run around. But if the mind is not under the influence of the intellect, doesn't listen, like I don't listen to my supervisor at job. So here the mind says, the intellect says, you know what, let us sit down and meditate. Mind says, no, no, it's, you know, who will sit for half an hour? Let's go out. It's a nice sunny day. Let's go play golf. Or, you know, let's go on a picnic. Waste of time every half an hour. Every morning, half an hour, 1 hour, we don't gain anything. Or, you know, I have, you know, committed that I'm going to do some service project at the temple or at the mission. Mind says, oh, there are a lot of people. If you all always, you are doing, what are the others doing? So mind has all kinds of excuses. So the intellect should control the mind and dhriti and with firmness. So the mind should be withdrawn from the world and connected to self, to Bhagwan within. And all desires, bad desires, but when I sit for meditation, even the good desires, I want this, I want that, I want something good, should be given up. The mind should become quiet. But what we do, our mind is all the time running. You know, lady is thinking, oh, Diwali just passed, I worked so hard, you know, and prepared sweets and all. And now Thanksgiving is coming and the whole family is going to come to my house. So I have to get ready. And then thanks after Thanksgiving will come Christmas. And then I have to buy toys for. So mind is already thinking about things that are far, far away. Either what has passed, what I did in Diwali or what I'm going to do in Thanksgiving, Christmas. So when thoughts come, like that, when I'm sitting for meditation, this shloka is specifically for meditation. I'm sitting for meditation. You should tell your mind, not now. Any thought that comes, oh, I should do this or that, you say, not now. Right now, be in the present. I'm here. I'm not going to think about past, not going to think about future. And even not even going to think about any worldly things. So the example they give is like, I have some important project at work, which I'm supposed to, you know, turn in by 1 o'clock. So at 6 o'clock, I'm already thinking about that project. You say, not now, you know, finish your meditation, get ready, go to work at 8, and then you have 5 hours to finish the project. Or, you know, I mother, her child is sick, and so she has to take him to the doctor. Now, it's an important thought. We are not saying a project at work or child sick, but it is 6 o'clock in the morning, and I think, oh, I have to take my child to the doctor. But the doctor doesn't open till 8, so you're not going to take him till 8 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock in your meditation, you are thinking of child and doctor. You should say, not now. At this moment, my thought should be of God. Of course, I have to take my child, I have to finish the project, but that will be taken care of later on when the time comes. So, this idea that at this moment I am thinking about God and God alone and nothing else, important. Like if you're sitting in an important board meeting and somebody calls or, somebody knocks on the door, you say, no, not now. Right now, we are in this important board meeting. After the meeting, I will address. So, same way, just as that board meeting is important, this is my meeting with the Lord, who is the Supreme Lord of the whole universe. So, I should not let anything else disturb my mind at that time. And it will happen gradually. And the more you think of God, the more your mind becomes pure. So it is a gradual process. It's not going to happen overnight, not going to happen suddenly. But our problem is that we have a lot of raga dvesha, likes and dislikes. So a person we like, we think about him or her in meditation. But person we dislike, we definitely think about that person. I'm sitting for meditation and you say, yesterday at the party, why did that guy come? I don't like him. Why he ruined my whole party? Not only is ruining your party, he's ruining your meditation, your day. So do not have strong likes and dislikes because dislikes make you think. So the example they gave of Ravana, Ravana, we just finished Ram Navami, the 9 days. So he was sitting in his palace and he heard that Ramchandra ji is coming with his army up to the banks, up to the banks of the ocean. They tell him Ram is coming. He said, no, he's just a human. He cannot destroy me. I have defeated all the devas. But inside he's worried and he has hatred towards Ram. And then they say he has built a bridge, Setu. Now he has come. Again, he said, oh, he was thrown away by his own subjects from his kingdom. So what can he do? Outwardly, he's bragging, but inside he's worried, and he have hatred for Ram. I must kill him. I must kill him. So, or Kansa, same thing. He was told that, his sis Devaki's 8th son will kill you. So he puts her in the prison, Devaki and Vasudev, and kills 7. And he says now he's waiting for the 8th, when the 8th will be born. Of course, everybody knows the story. And 8th one, Sri Krishna escapes, and Yog Maya is put in his place, a girl child. And he says, oh, girl child. And when he tries to kill her, she just flies off and says, oh, Kansa, the 8th one you are looking for has already escaped, and you cannot escape. So then, for years, he is thinking about Krishna, and he sends all demons to kill him, and all, and Putana, and all, and then ultimately. But the interesting point is that Ravana and Kansa were both given moksha by Bhagwan. They say if you think God with love, he will give you moksha. If you think God with hatred, but all the time, you will still get moksha. Because if you have thought of God, it is true. They say if you think of him as an enemy or think of him. So rather than think of God as an enemy, think of God with love. How much better will that be? So that is what is gradually happens. And it is the vasanas that cover my mind and then don't let me go out. So what do we do in meditation? So very important point is that the mind at that time should not be thinking of any desire, even enlightenment. When you sit and say, oh, when I'm meditating, then a light will shine and I'll become enlightened. No, even enlightenment should not be there. My goal should not even be enlightenment, or I should become a famous teacher, or I should, get well known. None of that. I am just sitting because this is the right thing to do. This is what my mind needs. And you keep your mind centered on the self in meditation. That's why he says, Atma samtham mana kritva na kinchid api chintayet. Center the mind in the self, in Bhagwan, in God, and think of nothing else. Even don't think of what I will get, or God will appear, or enlightenment, or famous, nothing. I'm just sitting with Bhagwan, with the self, and don't think of anything else. And slowly, the mind, which is sattvic, which has been kept in sattva, in sattvic thoughts, in sattvic ideas, in sattvic principles, the mind that is kept more and more in sattva, and then in meditation, we connect it with God within, not only God outside, but God within. So what happens slowly, this sattvic mind, this pure mind, we have three gunas, tamas, rajas, and sattva. Tamas is laziness, rajas is passion, and sattva is purity. So the mind that is kept in purity, in sattva, connected with God, with Bhagwan, slowly that mind merges, becomes one with that. It's not that I suddenly see God or God appears. No, I disappear. I means this ego, this individual ego merges into God's presence within. So, I'm sitting as a meditator and I am meditating on meditated. So I am sitting meditating on God or on the self or on Om or on Atma, whatever. Ultimately, I, the meditator, disappear into the experience of the totality, into the experience of the reality. And for that, it is very important to remove the vasanas, because the vasanas are my obstacle, and the vasanas block my view of consciousness. Even God is within, but my connection with God is blocked. So it is like the cloud, the sun is bright and brilliant, but the south cloud comes and blocks my vision. It cannot block the sun. The sun is 93 million miles away, but it obscures my vision. So I say, oh, sun is covered. Sun is not covered. My mind is, my vision is covered by the cloud, because sun is millions of miles away. It is illuminating the entire cosmos. What can this small little cloud do? So same way, the vasanas are like that cloud that cover my mind. Even though Bhagwan is infinite, he is everywhere, but because of vasanas, my mind is obscured and I'm not able to see God, not able to experience God's presence. Actually, we all are that divinity. The scriptures tell us you are divine, you are that Atma, you are that self. But in our ignorance, I think I am this body, limited body, mind, intellect, and they tell us that body, mind, intellect are your equipment, you are Atma. So just as the cloud can be removed by breeze, a strong wind comes and blows the cloud away, and then the sun we can see brightly. So same way, this knowledge of the scriptures is like that wind that blows away all the vasanas, the coverings of the vasanas. Of course, knowledge and bhakti and karma yoga, all three. So the vasanas are blown away, and then my divine nature, that is my true nature, manifests itself, which was always there. Like the sun was always there, temporarily covered by the clouds. So same way, Bhagwan is always there within me, but it is because of my selfish desires, my vasanas, that I don't see, experience God's presence. So through meditation, when your mind becomes quiet through watching your breath, relaxing your body, all the techniques of meditation. If anybody would like to learn about meditation, I do have a short video I can forward to you. Let me know. So as the mind becomes quiet with watching your breath, relaxing your body, and connects with Bhagwan within, slowly, slowly, the mind disappears. Mind disappear does not mean I don't, can't think, but this ignorance disappears, and then the knowledge shines forth, and then I realize that that truth alone I am, and that alone is the purpose of meditation, that alone is the purpose of life. My life has mainly only one goal. All other goals are secondary. My family, my spouse, my job, my money, all those things we need, but they are secondary to my God, and that has to become the main purpose. And then ultimately the individual disappears. The mind disappears into, that's why when we sit in the presence of these Swamis who come, you feel you're in the presence of God, because they always live in that. And think about all the saints, you know, Mirabai, Tukaram, Narsimha Mehta, all these Sant Gyaneshwar, they always lived in that. And that's why people around them also felt blessed. So that is the advantage of the spiritual path, that I connect with God, and that ultimately is my whole goal in life. So just to summarize, you know, our attachment is to sorrow. We detach from that and give up all our sankalpas, our fanciful imaginations, and slowly, slowly connect the mind with buddhi, with control the mind with buddhi, and connect it in the self. And ultimately, I, the ego, disappears and God alone remains. It's not that I disappear into nothingness, but I become one with God. So that is the goal. And so this number 25, all these shlokas, of course, are beautiful. But for those who meditate, please read the commentary on number 25 and practice that. We'll continue from number 26. And in 26, Bhagwan will tell us what happens when the mind runs in meditation, when it wanders. So we'll do that in 2 weeks. Thank you. Lata, you have a question?
I do. Do you have other meanings of sankalpa?
No, the two meanings. One is the fanciful imagination that by getting this, I will be happy. I don't have it.
Okay.
And then constantly brooding upon it. That is sankalpa. And then the second one, what Gurudev says, that I start a project and I don't, halfway I give it up, go to the next one, third one. So never complete my goal, never accomplish.
Okay.
So these are the two main meanings of sankalpa.
Okay. I understand before you take up a project or something that you do sankalpa. Before we start of yatra, we do the sankalpa. Would that meaning be different than what you just said?
Yeah, that meaning is different. That is a good, very good point. Before puja or before yatra, that sankalpa is invoking Bhagwan's grace, that this is what I'm going to do in this puja or in this yatra. And me, yeah, that is different from this sankalpa. Yeah, that is with what Bhagwan is mentioning. Sankalpa is sankalpa prabhavan kaman. Desires arising out of sankalpa. The other one is sankalpa is a determination and invoking God's grace.
Invoking
so that
God.
is different.
Thank you.
That's a good point. Girish Bhai, you have a question?
No.
I think you are unmuted. Oh, Harsha Ben? No?
No. Sorry.
Okay. No problem. Okay. Anybody else has questions, comments? Yeah, Joyce, go ahead, please.
I saw the notation of Ashasta. Does that mean eight? Or what do we mean by
Ashtadha.
Ashtadha. What does that mean?
Ashtadha means eightfold prakriti. Eightfold nature. See, God says that my prakriti is eightfold. You know how eightfold? Space, air, fire, water, earth, which make this world, mind, intellect, and ego. So the whole universe is made of these five elements, mind, intellect, and ego. That is the universal Ashtada Prakriti, and we are also made of eight. We are also made of five elements, you know, space, air, fire, water, earth. mind, intellect, and this jiva, this individuality. So yeah, Ashtashtadha Prakriti can be at the universal level or can be at the individual level. So the idea is that that is my lower nature, Bhagwan says in the Bhagavad Gita, my lower nature is this eightfold. My higher nature is that which is beyond all these. So that's how Bhagwan says in the Bhagavad Gita. So same way, my lower nature is this body, mind, intellect, and this five elements and this ego. But my higher nature is Om. My higher nature is consciousness. In this chart, you can see, I think those who have the BMI chart, Om is my higher nature. And just to briefly go over for those who are new, I am this body, mind, intellect. With the body, I perceive objects. With the mind, I feel emotions. With the intellect, I think thoughts. And vasanas are the cloud that cover me from Om, from my true self, my Atma. So this all this lower part of the BMI chart is all my Ashtadha Prakriti. Om is my higher nature. So one is lower nature and one is higher nature. Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Om Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotir Gamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Thank you very much. My pranams to all.